Before we get started, I wanted to remind you that the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated daily fantasy app. It's Super Week, and KJZ on ESPN Radio weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern brings you the insights of former Super Bowl champion Keyshawn Johnson, along with co-hosts Jay Williams and Zubin Mehenti. KJZ is also available as a podcast after every show. Welcome to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks the smash concept is what his mom does to his food before putting it in his bowl. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. And I am delighted today to not only be talking about the Super Bowl, obviously, at all, everything's led up to this, but I feel like I have the perfect guest for this episode. It's his second time on our podcast. He has his own podcast called Jeff Schwartz is Smarter Than You. That revealed his name because it's in the name of his podcast. It's Jeff Schwartz. Thank you so much for joining us this week, Jeff.
I am glad to be here. I'm doing much better than the GameStop stock is right now. So things are looking up for me. I'm excited to talk about the Super Bowl.
GameStop feels like already like 5 weeks ago. That's not like so many things happen now all the time that it wasn't even a week ago, but I've moved past my GameStop jokes. I was making one on maybe every ESPN program and did not get a lot of light laughs out of Adam Schefter, sadly. But Jeff, you know, okay, so first of all, a little housekeeping. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl. We're going to break down both sides of the ball, but the Rams kind of threw a wrench into our plans to focus entirely on the game this week. So I'm going to talk a lot more about the Rams and the Lions and the Matt Stafford, Jared Goff trade as the offseason goes on. But I do want to take some time today to give initial thoughts on that. So I was thinking halftime break today, instead of taking questions, you and I can, you know, just, I won't say grade the trades, but just give our initial thoughts. I've let it marinate. I've gone through, like, I think this is it's a fascinating trade for like bigger picture reasons that go far beyond the two teams, like philosophical football reasons. But it's also a trade where I think you can legitimately, it's not like, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, where I was like, I don't really, like, we're really going to talk about this. This is an insane trade. This trade, I feel like you can make a case for and against the Rams. And I've heard people do it. So I want to hear your thoughts on that. But first, I want to hear your thoughts on, obviously, the game, the Chiefs, and you're a great guest in every way. You're very smart and analytical, and you cover the league, but you are ideal right now because I don't think there's a single more important thing in this football game that's more likely to swing the game or enable the Tampa Bay to pull off an upset than the Chiefs' offensive line. And you are not only a former offensive lineman, your brother is one of the reasons why backups are, I mean, that was worded very weirdly by me, but your brother was starting tackle for the Chiefs. It is not, the Chiefs have done musical chairs across the offensive line. They lost to left tackle Eric Fisher in the AFC Championship. At this point, the only player I believe who's starting at the position he started week one is a center, Austin Ryder. So I think we should start on that side of the football and start with the offensive line. Because first and foremost, do you agree with me that this is like the single most important thing in this game?
It is. And I tried to rack my brain. I wrote for Fox Sports about this this exact topic, is that I can't think of a team who even made the Super Bowl who had a worse situation offensive line than the Chiefs. Most of the time you make the Super Bowl because you're healthy. Like, that's number one reason. You're just the last team standing. Obviously, the Chiefs have Pat Mahomes, but the rest of the team is very healthy, except their offensive line, like you mentioned. They're now moved a right tackle to left tackle. Their left guard has played 14 games because their left guard got hurt in week five of the season. Their center, Austin Ryder, you mentioned him. He actually got benched this year. People forgot about that because they had so many injuries, he had to go back in the game. Andrew Wiley, the right guard, is only starting this year because Larry took the season off to stay in Montreal to fight COVID. And now Andrew Wiley's playing right tackle because Mike Remmers went to left tackle. And now they put in Steven Wisniewski to play right guard. It's that complicated up front. And against this Bucs defensive line, it's a huge advantage for Tampa Bay for multiple reasons. One is obviously the pass rush, right? We saw last weekend they had all five of their sacks I believe, on only four-man rushes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They did a great job of scheming up JPP against Billy Turner. Shaq Barrett had three sacks, but some of those were because JPP forced Rodgers kind of back out the pocket. And they did a great job of just scheming the rush together. So why is that important that you can get home with four guys? Because Pat Mahomes is so good against pressure. You cannot pressure Pat Mahomes. You just can't do it. By pressure, I mean blitz, right? And we saw this year the best game plan was what the Falcons did in week 16, even though the Chiefs, I don't know how hard they were trying, and what the Bills did in week 6, which was the Falcons ran a lot of simulated pressure. So they brought four, but it was a different combination of four, which works well against a lot of teams, but it works well against the Chiefs. And then also what the Bills did in week 6, which was we're going to play too high and we're going to rush the passer and we're going to let them run the football and hopefully they'll score 35 points. And all these things work really well when the offensive line is beat up for the Chiefs and the Bucs can rush the passer. And lastly too, Mina, is we know that pressure situations are typically third and long. And you can mitigate some third and longs by running the football, by doing some things with quick passes and whatnot. But this Chiefs offensive line is not going to run block very well against this Tampa Bay front. And by the way, they don't even care because they don't care to run the football anyways. So we might have situations where it is third and longer just because they will try to run the ball. I mean, Andy will try to establish it somehow, and it might be via the jet sweep or some sort of quick pass to the sideline, but they're going to be in third and long, I think, more than they would like to. And I caution you to think about last year. People say the Chiefs cannot be stopped. They had 10 points with 7 minutes left in that game last season. It can be done.
And last year, you saw San Francisco had the most talented front in the NFL in the postseason. Yeah. And it really, it took until the end of the game, not only because, you know, Mahomes made some godlike plays in the fourth quarter, but also that pass rush got a little bit tired as the game went on and they kind of lacked depth. And I think you could totally see it playing out the same way this year against Tampa, where it's the fourth quarter and Shaq and JPP are a little bit tired and finally Patrick can punish them even if they're down. But, you know, like I went on SVP last night, Jeff, and I said, I'm so glad I'm on your show Monday because you're going to hear Rush with Four so many times between now and Sunday. You're going to absolutely, it's going to be the new Scoop There It Is. Actually, no, Scoop There It Is will never get old, but Rush with Four does get old. But it's true. It's just like blitzing Pat Mahomes is a death wish. You saw the Bills tried a little bit because they just kind of ran out of shit to do last week. You just can't. I mean, it's a nightmare. In the last time these two teams played, Todd Bowles blitzed less than normally. I mean, typically the Bucks have one of the blitz happiest teams in the NFL, but he dialed that down in a big way from like 38% to 24%. And I don't anticipate that changing, especially as you pointed out, given how strong JPP and Shaq Barrett have been throughout the whole offseason, not just in the Green Bay. They rank first and second in ESPN's NFL pass rush win rate. So I think from a pressure standpoint, we know the Bucs are going to take that approach. Let me ask you this. You talked a little bit about, you mentioned the jet sweeps. You know, you saw the Chiefs doing a little bit of that to neutralize Myles Garrett in the Browns game. Like, what can Kansas City do? So they're playing behind, and you can speak to this from experience. When you have that sort of ramshackle, like, I'm not saying that you're experienced being on ramshackle offensive lines, but knowing the position and what kind of plays you can and can't run when you're that disadvantage, what can Kansas City do? Like, I feel like we always just assume everything's so easy for Patrick Mahomes, and it's like, just dial up one of those winging irons and, you know, a little shovel pass with the bumps, you know. But realistically, what can Andy Reid and Patrick do to compensate for what I think is a dramatic mismatch in the trenches?
Well, a couple things. Look, people talk about communication and whatnot. This is a veteran group, even though they're playing at different spots. You know, Wisniewski was on the team last season. He played left guard in the Super Bowl. Like, he's a veteran. He's won two Super Bowls. He played with the Eagles in the Super Bowl run, even though he has not been on the Chiefs very, very much this year. He knows what he's doing. Andrew Wiley has been there for multiple years now. So has Ryder. Now, the left guard, Alec Gretty, has not been there very long. And Mike Remmers is a veteran. He knows what to do. So knowing what to do, it won't be the problem. And I think Andy Reid will still call the same game plan. The difference is, obviously, is that the execution up front might be different, right? So if you call, let's say, a shovel pass, which they love to do in short yard, especially in the low red zone, you know, maybe that double team between the right guard and the right tackle now is just not as good because, you know, Wisniewski and Wiley haven't had a rep of that in full, you know, full speed yet. And it's just not as good, right? And now you get a 1 yard play, not a 4 yard play. So it's little moments like that, I think, where it'll matter in the run game. Now in the pass game, the goal obviously is to throw the ball out quickly. And with the Bucs pass rush, we talked about it obviously heavily. Their secondary was really good last weekend. And if you look at a lot of the sacks that were in Rodgers, no one was open either. And the Bucs are going to have to pair up the secondary with the pass rush and hope that, hey, we can slow down enough of what they do in the pass game, at least quick pass game, to get to Mahomes and affect him. Something that always people always talk about, and I love to debunk because it's really interesting. People will say, and they're going to listen to this and say, hey, you know what? The Chiefs should chip, you know, should help the left tackle, help the right tackle. Well, no, you don't want to do that, because do you want Travis Kelce on a route or do you want him blocking? Yeah. Do you want him blocking, right? You want, if you watch the best pass offenses, when they play a good pass rush, what do? They spread everyone out, because then the defense has to spread out itself, has to declare what they're doing, and you throw the ball quickly. So I expect a lot of empty from the Chiefs. I would expect a lot of quick passes from them. They haven't done a lot of screens in the playoffs, and I do wonder if that is because that is a very detail-oriented part of of your offense, and without these guys having played their positions very often, Andy might stay away from those just because, like, you know, that's, you got to be the right point, the right time, and if you screw it up, it's a bad play. Maybe he stayed away from that. Because they haven't done a lot of that.
I actually have been wondering about that, and I've been wondering if it has to do with the blocking, because you're right, if you get blown up, that's a negative play, whereas with the jet sweeps and the RPOs, he can count on his, not only can he count on Patrick Mahomes in the case of the RPOs, talk about that in a second, but he can count on, you know, Hill, Hardman, etc., to manufacture yards after the catch off to get the jet sweeps. Because, like, what defenses have done to the Chiefs, what they've done much of the season, and I think Tampa Bay did after initially sacrificing Carlton Davis to Tyreek Hill for an entire quarter, is which they're not going to do at this game, guys.
No.
Even though they played a ton of press all the postseason, they will change that, at least against Tyreek Hill. But the defenses have sat back in too deep and said, hey, please run the ball. Please, please. Every Kansas City run is a freaking victory. If you're a Bucs fan, you are pumping your fist every time they hand the ball off.
Yes.
And so what Mahomes and Bieniemy and Reed have done in response is, okay, you're going to take away the vertical threat, so we're going to use our horizontal speed. And sometimes we're going to pop one off because our guys are that fast and our play designs are that good. I think one of the things that's made this such a special season for Mahomes is he's really, I wouldn't say developed, but he's taken another step forward as a quick passer, which you didn't see as much his first two seasons in the NFL, and you saw right out the gate this year with the Texans game. Do you remember that week one?
Oh yeah.
He comes out.
I remember talking to Mitch about this early in the season when he was playing. He goes, yeah, like Mahomes just takes what they give him now. Like that's a big difference.
It's so cool.
And it, you know, but interesting you said that, because there are times this year when he does stray from that and he tries to make too big of a play. And it typically happens when the offense is kind of slow to start the game. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that, you know, this season, kind of the Chiefs just like meander around and kind of not play as hard as we think they should. And then in the second half of games, trying to spark a little bit of offense, he then tries to do too much. And so if the Chiefs are able to come out hot, come out efficient, I think we'll see a big part of the offense being that. And I've thought about that as well, meaning, because, you know, my favorite concept, all of our favorite concept, is four verts, right? In Kansas City does that more than anyone else when they're running their normal offense. We haven't seen that very much the back half of the season. They have not run a lot of four verts. To your point, teams are playing a bunch of too high. Yeah. It's hard to run those consistently with safeties playing very deep and very off. And Mahomes is doing a great job of finding little creases. You mentioned that, you know, RPO Tyreek Hill, boom, 70 yards later at the 5 yard line. That's how simple it can be for them.
It's the RPO. I mean, in week 12, they absolutely obliterated them with RPOs. They could not run the ball for anything, but I feel like every CH carry was like 2 yards or something, but the RPOs were deadly. And again, it's like, okay, if you're gonna sit back, this is what we will do, because the Chiefs have like elevated the RPO through a combination of the fact that they have the fastest players in the world, the fact they have very innovative play callers who break tendency all the time and move those players around like chess pieces, and then the fact that they have a quarterback who can throw from any arm angle off of any platform, which it's, we were talking about this a little bit on live today. Like, we never see highlights of Mahomes' RPOs because they're RPOs, and we'd rather see him, you know, launching the ball 40 yards downfield after evading like four pass rushers or whatever. But when you rewatch the games, and this was something that jumped out to me upon rewatching week 12, some of those are some of his coolest plays because it's almost like he's like a gunslinger, like from the old West, because the ball has to come out so hot, right, off an RPO, and he'll be like falling to his side and go pew pew, and all of a sudden the ball's like boom, and it's perfectly placed, and Tyreek Hill to get him yards after the catch. And it's a play that Mahomes only can make, even though it's only for like 7 yards.
It's stupid. I couldn't imagine playing defense against him because you can do everything right and he just makes you look stupid. Like, and I play with some good quarterbacks. I play with Eli Manning. I play with Alex Smith. You know, they're good. Eli we can get in debate about his Hall of Fame candidacy another time. And they were great. And it was fun to play with those guys. I couldn't imagine playing with Mahomes, man. Like, he does stuff like his arm, your arm throwing a football, you should not be able to throw like a baseball. That's not how you should be able to throw the ball like that. Like, there are no words to explain some of the throws he makes. I mean, even against Buffalo, the one that like third window throw to Travis Kelce where he pumped, it's like, how do you, if you're Buffalo, you're just like, oh, well, he just screwed, I guess. He just beat us again. Like, what do you do? And so I think that part of playing defense against Pat, and maybe the second time around Tampa just mentally will be more prepared for it. It's like, you're going to have the right defense called. He's just going to make you look stupid. And you have to forget about that. You cannot wallow in pity that he beat your perfect call. And you just have to get ready to play the next game. Because that stuff is demoralizing. Defense is a very emotional position. And if you don't get help from your offense, you're just not as good. Also, they just, you know, if you just get beat like on a call that was right, that sucks. On offense, we don't worry about that as much. If they call cover three and we get, you know, third and eight and we throw a complete pass, like, oh well, we'll just do it again next time. But defensively, they get bummed when that happens, and it's so demoralizing for a defense.
Let's talk a little bit about the defense. So we agree that up front they have an advantage. Like, I know we've just been oozing over Patrick Mahomes and how crazy he is and the skill players. But like, again, this is what, if any team other than the Chiefs was coming to Super Bowl with this offensive line, there was no chance in hell they would be favored to win. Okay. No chance in hell. And meanwhile, like I said, JPP and Shaq Barrett have been incredible the postseason. And then to say nothing of two and getting Vea back, which is what enables the four-man rush. Like, every time they condense the pocket, Rodgers would step right up into one of those big boys. So that's a problem. But the issue for the Tampa is, okay, what happens if the rush doesn't get home? Patrick Mahomes does get the ball off. How do you approach this from a coverage standpoint beyond what we said, sitting back in zone a bit more? Because in week 12, Travis Kelce, let's see, six of his eight catches were when a linebacker was the nearest defender. So let me ask you that. How do you stop that from happening? How do you not, because I wrote down 45, 54, 45, 54. How do you not end up in that situation with Travis Kelce?
Well, against zone coverage, you're kind of screwed, right? Unless they go to that 1x3, right? That nub formation, which the best in the NFL at. They put Kelce by himself, and then they put Tyreek Hill in the slot, right? He's number three. And they just, it's almost impossible to guard that. I think sometimes the best defense is scoring points on offense. Like, I don't know, if you don't get home with the rush, you're not going to cover these guys. Like, that's just not going to happen. We've seen no one be able to slow the Chiefs down with Pat Mahomes if you do not hit him. If you give him time, you will die. Like, there's no, I can't think of a game where it was like, you know, Pat had all day to throw and just sucked. That doesn't happen. And so I think you combat that by obviously pressuring him. If you can't do that, your offense has got to put the pressure on the Chiefs offense. You have to keep scoring for Tampa Bay's offense, like nonstop, go for it on fourth down. Every play you've ever drawn up has got to be in this week. And you keep the pressure on them by forcing them to just keep scoring and keep up with you. I don't know if there's a great, like, hey, run cover two. I mean, even Bill Belichick, like, he's played them four times now and he's allowed 40, 31, 24 twice, I think, or 23. And what they did is they just did multiple coverages, but I'm not sure that that's what Tampa defense does best, right? Bill Belichick is, you know, one play, he'll run a version of cover one, then quarters, then he'll run cover three, then he'll run a different version of cover one. That's not really what Tampa Bay does. And so I think they true themselves to stay in two man and just kind of hope that you don't get beat deep.
So in Mahomes' losses, he has 9 career losses. He's averaged 31.3 points per game.
Yeah.
So you got to score is a shy, I guess. You heard it here first, folks. You got to outscore the Chiefs to beat the Chiefs. I just want to stress, like, this is not a lost cause because of the what we've been talking about, the offensive line. It is really... as you described earlier, Jeff, like I really can see a situation in which they end up in some third and uncomfortables, especially in the first three quarters of this game. The other thing I would add is just like, you really need to take advantage, whether it's, I don't know, weird special teams mishaps or, yeah. It's such an obvious and dumb thing to say, but, yeah, if we're looking for the formula for an upset and we're starting with, you know, getting pressure with four, and we'll get to the offense momentarily, I would be remiss not to add that, something like, if they fumble the ball, you got to recover it, Tampa.
They have to force turnovers at the same rate they've been doing. Like, you cannot have a turnover free game on defense really and win this game. Like, you have to force turnovers at the rate you've been doing against New Orleans and Green Bay. Even if it's not three, it's two. I mean, you got to do something. You can't just, you're not going to force enough three and outs, enough points, to make this a close game unless you turn them over a couple times.
And no dumb penalties, which is something that they've improved on as the season has gone along, the Tampa Bay defense.
They have, yes. So they, and Dominican Sue, I wonder if they can bait him into that. It's always fun to do that.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break. We're going to talk about the other side of the football, which they're both quite interesting, but I want to talk about the Stafford trade and what it means. So let's take a quick break and then get to that.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways, for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow, MinaShow, today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now, get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th, one-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
So, Jeff... I'm just going to put you right on the spot. What grade would you give the Los Angeles Rams?
Going right to grades. The two things I hate the most in this football complex.
You always just got to say B. B is safe. Can't
grade,
go wrong
with B. Grades and draft comps. Oh, like draft comps drive me crazy. For the Rams, I think it's an A because it gives them a better chance to win now.
Okay, so you are loving it. Okay.
Well, here's the reason why.
I'm a cowardly B.
I'm of the opinion that you should go all in when you think you have a chance to win a Super Bowl. And they think that Stafford gives them a better chance to win, go all in. I'm not of the opinion, by the way, that draft picks don't matter. I think they've heavily mortgage their future, right, mm-hmm. to win now. But if they feel they have a chance to do it, I'm okay with teams going for it. Like, I think you should. I mean, look, and the best example obviously is Kansas City trading up for Pat Mahomes, right? They were close, and they just did it. They went ahead and did it, and I'm fine with. So I give them an A for effort, essentially, right? Now, is there a chance they become Houston Texans by 2024? Yes. If this doesn't work, they won't have a, you know, they'll need a new coach and they'll need a quarterback and they'll have no draft picks. It's definitely possible, which I kind of lean that's probably closer to what will happen than win a Super Bowl for a couple of reasons, but I give them an A for effort, man. Like I can't say like the Browns should go draft another quarterback, which I kind of believe, instead of paying Baker Mayfield. And then, you know, go ahead and say the Rams were, give them a C for trading for Stafford.
So, okay, a lot to unpack here. I probably should have started the whole thing by reminding people what the trade entailed, because it's been a few days. So Rams gave up 2 firsts and a 3rd and Jared Goff for Matthew Stafford, which from the Rams' perspective, it's just a player talent bet, right? So financially, they're both taking about low $20 million cap hits this year. The Rams did it because they think Matt Stafford is enough of an upgrade at quarterback to put their team over the edge. And they're giving up the draft picks in exchange for it. Both teams, I think, have a little bit more cap flexibility than one might think on the other side of this. The Lions did it because they don't really care about winning now. They think Jared Goff's okay. I really believe that from what I've heard. And they wanted the draft picks. So back to the Rams. To me, the analogy I've used, it's kind of like the Rams are drag racing, and this is entirely based on my viewings of Fast and Furious franchise. Okay. They said, all we need is an engine. The rest of the car is probably going to get a little rusty because we don't have money or draft picks to fix it. But we think upgrading our engine is going to be enough. So they're going to pull in and it's going to start getting rickety, but this is the most important part of the car, and this analogy made a lot of sense when I started it. I'm not sure it's holding, but I think you know what I mean.
Yeah. I mean, that's assuming, obviously, the defense has no regression, right?
Which No. The defense is regressing. That's the rust on the car. So, So the engine is...
I don't know if it was like they're like older offensive line.
No, Stafford is the engine. Everything else is going to rust. So, look, the defense is going to be worse next year. I'm just going to say it. Now, the question is, how worse? I think it's up for debate. They lost their defensive coordinator, Brandon Staley. They're probably going to lose one of, if not both of, John Johnson and Leonard Floyd. I think John Johnson, the safety, is the impactful loss. I think you put anyone in the defensive line next to Aaron Donald. They've got two generational talents in Donald and Ramsey, but we saw what happens when one of those generational talents gets injured in this defense against Green Bay. Defenses tend to regress year to year. All that said, yes, their defense is going to regress, but hell, their defense was going to regress even if they kept Jared Goff. Correct. And used one of those draft picks. So I think the upgrade at quarterback is worth it in the short term. In the long term, there's going to be pain. Absolutely. No question. But in the short term, the question then becomes, and this is what I want to ask you, how much better of a quarterback is Matthew Stafford? We know he pushes the ball downfield way more. Last season on 15-yard throws, he averaged 9 intended air yards per attempt, which ranks 6th. Jared was below Teddy Bridgewater and Ben Roethlisberger, so you can imagine where that ranks. Matt Stafford, we've seen, can create outside of structure. Jared Goff consistently cannot. If you had to rank these quarterbacks, you can do it a five range. You know, where would you put them?
I think the last thing you mentioned is the most important thing that they're missing in this offense, is kind of the ability to make plays late in the down to avoid pressure. Just when things break down, to make a play, because Jared Goff is a very structured quarterback, right? If things are not good around him, he's not as good. And, you know, if the look is not what he thought the look was going to be, he's not as good. And I think Stafford gives them the upside of, hey, we can make a play if it breaks down. We can get him out of the pocket a little bit more. I know they rolled out Jared Goff a fair amount of times, but I mean, more like actually a guy that can move a little bit out of the pocket, and a guy who's a gamer, man. Like, he's played hurt. He's played on bad teams. I think he'll be rejuvenated by getting the opportunity to play for Sean McVay and play for his organization and play with the weapons that he has. we'll find out. And I, you know, that we've slowly started to debate, you know, kind of the legacy of Matt Stafford, I think the last couple of years as his numbers continue to rise, because he'll be, you know, top three passing by the time he retires. And this is now his opportunity to show us whether or not he's a Hall of Fame quarterback, in my opinion. I'm not Dan Orlovsky. I'm not going to like love on Matt Stafford as much as other people will. And I love Dan for that. He's loyal to his friends as he should be. You know, but he's an upgrade over Jared Goff, I think, in every category you could ever want for a quarterback. Is he better than Russell Wilson in the division? No. But I think Sean McVay looks at it as, like you mentioned, an upgrade at the most important position in all sports. And if the defense just is top 10, not number one or number two, and our offensive line stays healthy, and we run the football, and everyone stays healthy, our offense can be top 10 too, and we'll be very balanced come playoff time.
And that's ultimately why I'm, again, in favor of the trade from the Rams' perspective, because, like, look at the forget the Super Bowl, look at the final four teams. You need a quarterback. And defenses, I mean, heck, you know, they're really, when once we got to the final four, all the defenses were not elite. I mean, the Bucs defense is good. They've been inconsistent. They have some elite aspects to them, I suppose. But, you know, the best defenses were knocked out. Yep. There's no telling what the Rams defense will look like next year. They have two transcendent players, and they will continue to be transcendent if they're healthy. But there's just, if you don't have one of those quarterbacks, you're always going to have a ceiling on your team. So they realized correctly that they were not in position to advance with Jared, and then they saw this as their best opportunity to upgrade, and I respect that. Now, before we wrap and get back to the game, the Super Bowl, I do want to ask you from the Lions standpoint, obviously very different timeline, very different interests. They're rebuilding. Stafford wanted out. They got a pretty nice return from him. That said, like, are you happy if you're a Lions fan with how this shook out?
You know, it's really interesting because Lions fans are super excited for Dan Campbell. I don't know, man. I mean, I've never seen a press conference like that, but maybe he's different than other coaches that have had bad press conferences. I think if you're a Lions fan, you know, you've been promised the future for a while now, and it finally feels like maybe they're going in that direction, right? They got rid of Stafford. You have draft picks now. You have a new quarterback. It does feel like, hey, we've moved on from the old Lions. Hey, we're going to be the new Lions now, right? And that starts with getting rid of Stafford. If you kept Stafford there, not to the fault of his own, but it would feel like the same old Lions, right? And now you have an opportunity to start brand new. If you want to keep Jared Goff or get yourself another quarterback in this draft, go ahead and do so. And so I think they're in a better place just because they basically have broken off from the old Lions and can now focus on being the new Lions. But again, I just don't have much faith in Dan Campbell. I know that, you know, people hate to pass judgment on press conferences, and we really shouldn't. I don't think it matters very much, but I don't know, man. I
do like their staff. So
they have a good staff, but again, the guy putting it all together is ultimately the head coach. Look, Anthony Lynn is a great OC, I think. Like, I think that's a good hire.
Weird fit with Goff, though. Now that you, I don't know, I haven't kind of wrestled with that yet. I was just kind of thinking about the trade. I haven't thought about Jared Goff in this offense and what is it going to look like, but like Anthony Lynn and Jared Goff is an odd, I mean, yeah. He's got to be the least mobile quarterback he's ever worked with.
We'll see obviously how that works. The one thing I found so fascinating about this trade is how everyone is like, poor Jared Goff. Like, this is the NFL, man. Like, if you don't perform, yeah, you're gonna get rid of you. And he made a Super Bowl. He's had opportunity in LA to do it, and they upgraded. Like, it's just, he's still getting paid millions of dollars to play next year in Detroit, and maybe he gets dealt somewhere else. I do worry about his psyche, though. I don't really, this could be bad. I think it could be bad for him mentally. We'll see, obviously, when we get to August and September. Detroit isn't, and I played there for just an offseason. I was just there for training camp in 2016. Mina, our first home preseason game was our second game of the preseason. We went 3-and-out. And they booed us. And so I turned to one of the players who'd been there a while. Maybe it was Ebron or Dan Molbach, the long snapper forever. And I was like, am I hearing what I'm hearing? They're like, yeah, they're booing us. Like, it's just a different beast in Detroit. We got booed on the first 3-and-out of the first home preseason game.
Well, I will say Jared Goff had like the worst rookie season of all time and bounced back. So the dude is resilient.
Yeah, but I think McVay, I know people hate like saying that he's a genius, and I think that word is thrown around too much. Though I think that his system was really beneficial to Goff. He was telling them to play until 15 seconds left. I mean, we all know that. Like, that's a lot of coaches don't do that. I've been on those headsets before when I've been hurt, and like, they just give you the play and that's it. There's no other thing they tell you. Like, hey, right, you know, two jet, I'll go special, and you just figure out on your own.
Well, I'll just say this, Jared, whatever, he'll be fine. But the Lions are in a really unique position because they picked seventh this year. And with this trade, it's not like they went out and got another first this year. They have two future firsts, but that does give them ammunition to move around in the draft if they so desire. If they are in love with a Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, it's in play. They'll have to move around. And it's so I think for Brad Holmes, who drafted Jared Goff and is the Lions GM, he didn't draft him. He worked for, like, he was the director of college scouting for the Rams. But my point is, he's got an interesting decision to face. Like, when does the future in Detroit start? Does it start this year, or they're probably gonna be bad. Let's be real. So is it next year? And then you've still got picks, and do you count on next year's quarterbacks? And I just think they're going to, I don't know what the right answer is. I haven't really evaluated the quarterbacks yet, and I don't know obviously what Detroit thinks, but they are a team to keep an eye on, Jeff, in terms of timelines, because they can move on from Jared Goff pretty easily in 2 years. Right.
I'm not sure they even know what they're going to do yet, because, you know, they probably haven't been, you know, they got their staff together. They probably haven't done a full evaluation yet of the quarterbacks from this class. And they definitely have not even thought about the quarterbacks next year either. So I'm not sure they know what they're going to do. And this may be why they wanted to make this trade so early. People have asked why this was done so early, probably just to move on from Stafford and have no doubt about, because look, if you keep Stafford till like free agency time and you have done now 2 months of research on the quarterbacks, maybe you think, okay, you know what, let's just keep Stafford because we don't really like, you know, Zach Wilson as much, or Justin Fields or Trey Lance, we'll just keep Matt Stafford. Then you kind of, like I mentioned earlier, the same old Lions. You make this trade now, you break away from him, and now you have a full, you know what, 3 months to decide if it's Jared Goff, if it's a young cat, or maybe it's both, and you have time to figure out what you want to do.
And Goff I've criticized him as much as anyone. He's competent, okay? Like, he's a competent NFL quarterback. So if you are to draft like a very raw quarterback, like a Trey Lance, he can sit for a year. You know what I mean? So it's an interesting position. We'll talk about that more, but it's Super Bowl week. So we're going to take a quick break and then get back to the Super Bowl. All right. So we talked about the Chiefs offense and the Bucks defense. I want to flip it now. This was an interesting rewatch week 12, Jeff, because it was really a tale of one quarter and three quarters. It's not like Tom Brady lit the Chiefs on fire for three quarters, but the Chiefs were so dominant in the first half of this game that you kind of felt like the Bucks slipping. And I think what was most interesting to me about this game is how fearless the Chiefs defense was the first time these teams played, how relentlessly they blitzed Brady. And through much of the game, especially the first half, they had a ton of success doing so. I want you to say Brady struggled with the blitz. The entire Bucks offense seemed out of sorts, including, you know, the backs and line. And then they kind of figured it out as the game went on. Do you think, I should note, this is a stat that I thought was crazy. I mean, so they blitzed Brady on 48% of his dropbacks, which is the most he's been blitzed in a loss in 11 years. It was crazy. And he threw two picks. He threw three picks against the blitz in every other game this season. Do you think Spagnuolo takes a similar approach, or do you think the fact that the Bucks kind of figured it out towards the end of the game might make him modify that?
Well, I think we look back to what happened last week. In week six against the Bills, right? I'll go back to week six now. The Chiefs, I think, blitzed Josh Allen on 15 of 31 dropback passes. They did the exact same thing against the Bills in the NFC Championship. Like, it wasn't a surprise. They blitzed they pressured his throwing hand the entire game. And the Bills had no answer except one play. And Devin Singletary dropped that pass against pressure, and the game kind of flipped after he dropped that pass. He didn't play the rest of the game either, I don't think. And so Tampa knows what they're going to do, because not only that, is that when Spags, as the Giants D coordinator, played Tom Brady in 07 in the Super Bowl, guess what they did? They pressured Tom Brady. Like, this is what they're going to do. So the question becomes, what is Tampa going to do to counter? Now, the Chiefs secondary plays far better in these moments than the numbers show. Like, I don't really, it's hard to explain their defense because they're terrible in the red zone, worse in the NFL. They're not particularly good on third down. They don't really, their pressure rate on defensive line, not very good, right? they're really good against a deep pass, though.
Fourth in EPA.
Really good.
Very good, yeah.
But, like, you just look at them and you're like, why do they keep doing this? And so I think they do that because they just play good, sound football, and Spags is a great coach, and Honey Badger just does so much for them. And so if you're Tampa Bay, you know they're going to pressure you. How are you going to mitigate it? Are you going to screen pass? Are you going to play action pass? Are you going to have hot insight answers, which they haven't? Honestly, I remember talking to mostly Dan about this. I talked most of my quarterback stuff with him because I don't really know any other quarterbacks that know it as well. Like, all season, the first few months of the year, I was like, why does Tampa have no answers to pressure? What is they never had it all year. Then after the bye, they just figured out how to do it. And so I think we'll see a different Tampa offense. If they don't change, they won't have a chance to win the game. But I want to give you one specific matchup that I think, and we talked about the inverse of this, which Chiefs O-line, Bucks D-line. Tampa's offensive line is really good. They have three players that can easily be all pros in the left guard, the center, and the right tackle. But the right guard is a backup. Alex Kappa, their starter, got hurt against Washington a few weeks ago. Chris Jones is going to have a huge.
You know what? I keep saying that though about Aaron Stinney, he was like a practice squatter, and he's actually acquitted himself. Now again, he hasn't played Chris Jones, who's the second best defensive tackle in the NFL.
And Chris and Tom have like a thing too whenever they play. that's like kind of fun to watch. Like they talk a bunch of shit to each other. But I will say, Ryan Jensen. If you guys don't know Ryan Jensen, you'll meet him.
Oh my God, the big red. He's been gobbling dudes.
Ryan Jensen and Chris Jones might punch each other in the first drive of the game. So you guys know, watch NBA Center and Chris
Jones. Dude. Oh my God.
And so I think they're going to try to, if I was Ryan, I know what Ryan's going to do. I've seen him play for many years now. He's going to try to get under Chris Jones's skin and try to get him off his game, because I think that's a really tough matchup for the Bucks right guard. Like and Chris Jones played really well last year. He affected the game in the Super Bowl last season, and he plays really well in big games. And so I'm curious to see what Tampa does to slow him down. Because if you get home with Chris Jones, you don't have to bring pressure, right? And that obviously makes you a better team. So I'm curious what's going to happen there.
He's really their only reliable pass rusher at Kansas City. I mean, so first of all, Chris Jones was ridiculous in week 12. He's very, very, very good at football.
I think he plays better in big games.
He's huge, and he's been crazy good in the postseason. But part of the reason why you and I both expect Spags to blitz so much. Remember when teams were like totally afraid to blitz Brady? It's really not the case this year. He's just not as good against the blitz as he was when he was younger. And he's still a very, very good quarterback. The arm is still great, but that fear isn't the same. And it's also because they just don't have, like, the Bucks defensive line is, you know, their standard rush is much better. The Chiefs too, like, you can't count on, you can't like play a bunch of games up front because Brady gets rid of the ball so quickly. Yep. So you can't count on Chris Jones and, I don't know, Frank Clark, you know, executing a perfect stunt or whatever. Like, it's just not going to work out half the time. And you know, I think sometimes it's a bit of a gamble, but more often than not, it works out against the Bucks, even if they've figured out sort of how to actually handle the blitz as the season has gone on. And this is a game, by the way, you talked a little bit about the answers that Brady's found as the season has gone on. God, this is a matchup where he could use James White. So the Chiefs defense.
The Bucks, when you said that the Bucks, that even though they have answers, it still has not been as good. It's because they can't, their running backs can't catch the ball.
They're just, you know, it's drop city one. And you know, Ronald Jones, that's just not his game. Leonard Fournette. I will say two of Leonard Fournette's best games as a receiver have been in the postseason this year. He's been better.
Playoff Lenny.
But the playoff Lenny is real. But the Chiefs defense, they're phenomenal in terms of EPA per play against receivers. Fourth in the NFL. 18th against tight ends and 31st against running backs.
They allow the most yards to running backs in the NFL in the past game.
I mean, this is one. You could totally see this hinging on like a couple big Leonard Fournette. Is he going to catch that? You know,
like, if Sam Perry caught the ball last weekend, that game is different.
It's different. Like, it's totally different.
And there will be opportunities for Fournette and Jones in the pass game. The question obviously becomes, will they catch the football? Because again, like a big out, like when you bring pressure, a lot of times the back leaks out, especially in empty. Sometimes the defense doesn't see that guy. And that's a lot of times a lot of confusion happens. And a lot of big plays against pressure are made because the back is by himself. And I will assume in this game that'll happen one time. We saw it happen against the Bills, that the guy is wide open. And is Fournette going to catch that ball and make them pay? Because if you make them pay two or three times, the defense is not going to do that anymore. You know, they don't want to get beat deep. And they have to find, and that's the best way to do it. They also have done a good job with Gronkowski coming in to block against zero pressure sometimes. There is one thing that no one has done this year that I'm curious if someone's going to do in the Super Bowl. We practice it. I remember only one team I ever practiced on was the Chiefs in 2013 with Andy Reid, all the way back then. Is basically against zero pressure, like so zero pressure, for those who don't know, it's, you know, everyone who's not guarding someone is pressuring, right? So you have you bring one more guy than the offense can block. Is you basically have a running back or tight end like hit their guy, so the guy blitz, so he comes and you just pop in the middle of the field really quick. It's really hard to do the timing to time it up, but there's literally nobody on that guy. And I wonder if like Tampa tries to do empty every little option possible in this game to get guys open. Because if you take like, you know, Gronkowski and he just, you know, he hits his linebacker who's blitzing and just pops the middle of the field, the linebacker's he's running to get Tom Brady. And so I wonder if they bring out everything possible, everything in the playbook, everything anyone has ever done against pressure this weekend.
Well, if you want to, first of all, Gronk's been an incredible blocker this year. And I'm like, if there's one thing to exploit on this Chiefs defense, it's that linebacking group. Whether it's running the football or in coverage, that is an area that Tampa could take advantage of. Tom has been, since week 12, has been phenomenal at throwing the deep ball. You mentioned earlier that Kansas City has been very good at defending the deep ball. And I think last week, Juan Thornhill was the best player on the football field on defense. He was tremendous, which is so important for Tyrann Mathieu, the Honey Badger, because now that Thornhill has returned to form, it allows Mathieu to freelance and he's devastating. So do you think, like, if from the perspective of the Chiefs, how do you approach coverage? We talked a little bit about the pass rush, and we expect Spagnuolo to blitz Brady at the same rate as he did last time. How do you think they're going to approach the back end?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they play a lot of that single high robber, right? When they bring pressure and kind of let Mathieu figure things out. And
Brady's good against.
I really think that the two tight ends are going to be a huge part of this game. I think you have to attack the Chiefs linebackers. And you have to find a way to make the middle of the field, you know, kind of be your place to live when there's pressure. And I think the Chiefs know that as well. I also think, look, Mike Evans, go win some 50-50 balls, man. Like, that's what they pay all that money. Like, so there's many different ways to defeat the pressure. And part of it is guys just making plays, but also I think attacking the middle of the field as best as you can. And then we mentioned, like, the backs have got to catch the football. It's very simple. You know, Antonio Brown, is he playing? I believe he's playing.
He's questionable, but I'm sure.
It's interesting. I don't know, you know, what his role will be in the slot. The Chiefs are not very good defending the slot wide receivers, I think, either. So that's something. The middle of the field is a really good place for Tampa to live. And, you know, it doesn't force Brady to stretch his arm out to the sideline, which we've seen this year has been some of a problem, those far hash throws to the sideline. Just kind of live in the middle of the field. But again, you know, Tyrann Mathieu kind of just wanders around the middle of the field too. So it's a really fun game from an X and O's perspective with the Chiefs defense against the Tampa offense. I think the other side we talked about earlier, just more of just like a physical matchup. This feels like the one where we get to see, you know, Spags against Brady, against Arians, against Leftwich. And I thought last weekend, or yes, no, I keep saying last weekend, 2 weekends ago, Byron Leftwich might call his best game. I mean, the variety with which they did things and the play action pass on first and 10 with like 2.5, you know, 2 minutes and 2 seconds left, I thought was a great call. They snuck out the tight end later in the game. You know, Fournette missed the pressure and Brady threw a pick. I get that on that one call. I saw his game. He just called a great game. The first down runs are annoying. Got to stop doing that. But maybe this is the week where they, you know, use that to their advantage and hit a bunch of play action passes early in the down.
Ugh, I hate, like, I don't want to become a parody of myself and just say more play action every time, but the Bucks really should use more play action. It's like, it's very confusing why they don't. I don't understand it.
Action pass is my favorite things offensive linemen to do because I am big, slow. I am still big, slow, and fat, but like, I get to go get my hands on someone right away in pass protection. And I get to sell my big ass, get to sell run. And those are big explosive plays. Like they're a lot of fun because you know, if you can block, you're going to get 12 to 15 yards and maybe a touchdown. And I wish more teams would do more of it. And Tampa Bay got better on offense when they started using more play action pass because it really, especially in 12 personnel, puts the defense in a lot of trouble. You're going to play nickel or you're going to play big. Well, then big, you have to guard your tight ends with linebackers, nickel, that you have an advantage in the run game. Like, so it puts defense in a bind to play, you know, to play action pass out of 12 personnel.
And it just, if Brady has time, he's phenomenal. Like,
yes.
But that's just it. That's like, okay, you know, rush with four is one cliche. The other one is going to be like Brady with time. Brady pressured or not. I mean, you talked a little bit about Mike Evans winning 50-50 balls. I think one thing that jumped out again in week 12, but as all season, like if the Chiefs are going to concede those deep go routes on the sidelines, if Brady has time, he will hit those.
Oh yeah.
He has like you saw that in the first half of the NFC Championship. He threw some dimes. One was actually quite under pressure, but for the most part, if he is kept clean, he will not only carve you up, he will carve you up downfield. But if L'Jarius Sneed is in his face, if Chris Jones is barreling up the middle, he will underthrow that ball and you will have a pick opportunity. So it is, to me, all about whether or not Brady has someone in his face or coming up behind him. And that's really going to, you know, that's the ball game right there.
I just love how football can be really complex and really you know, tough to learn. And there's a lot of complexity about it, but also can be really simple. Hey, just hit Tom Brady or don't hit him. That's the thing, you know, hit Pat Mahomes. And even if you hit him, he can still make plays. But like, even for Tom, it's very simple, right? If you hit Tom Brady, you win the game. If you can't hit him, probably going to lose. Like it's like, it can be so complicated, but also yet very simple.
Do you think the Chiefs, they use a ton of dime against Buffalo with Matthew Thornhill and then Daniel Sorensen's the third safety.
Yeah.
And they gave the Bills a lot of light boxes as well. And the Bills can't run the ball, but the Bucks are better at running the ball. 10th in DVOA. I think so. That's how Tom Ed. That feels right. And the Chiefs notoriously are bad at stopping the run because they don't care. They just do not care. They've recognized that it is not what they do. Do you expect a similar game plan from Spagnuolo in terms of having those safeties on the field?
I think so. Unless they want to play 12 personnel with bigger players, which I think they will have two options up and just seeing how the Bucks play. If the Bucks run the ball a bunch, maybe they, you know, but look, the running the ball thing is really interesting because, you know, run defense for the Chiefs doesn't matter because they're ahead at the end of every game. Right. So why do we care about, we have to rush the passer the last quarter of the game. We're not trying to stop the run. Right. So I think the Chiefs just don't care. If Tampa wants to run the ball, then be our guest. Just keep running the ball and we'll score 35 and you'll score, you know, 27 running the football. Like they just, it's not what they really care about. And, you know, we talk about Chris Jones in the run game. He could be, excuse me, the pass game. He could be had in the run game. He don't care about stopping the run. He doesn't care at all about stopping the run. And so, you know, there's many, many advantages for Tampa. They are a fairly simple run game, you know, like duo inside zone. And, you know, every now and then they pull a guard, but that's about it. So I think they're going to run the ball for sure. It's the Chiefs have to figure out what they want to do. I think they'll have many things possible and up, but I think they start out in that kind of big nickel, big dime and go from there. Cause again, they want to stop all the deep passes from Tom Brady
and Gronkowski and Bray. Yeah. Be our guest. Put our run defense to the test. All right, so the Bucks are better in the trenches on both sides of the football. Do you think they can win this game and pull off the upset?
Look, I thought they'd lose to the Saints and the Packers, so I don't really, to say the Chiefs are going to win. Here's the way I look at this game from the simplest angle of who's going to win is the Chiefs can play a B game and win. Tampa can't, right? So I think Tampa has to have kind of all these check marks hit. And if Kansas City plays their A game, doesn't matter if the check marks hit, Kansas still winning. But I keep thinking back to last year, right? The Chiefs were, I think, better offensively a little bit last season, according to DVOA, right? And they had a better offensive line. And they only had 10 points through 53 minutes of the game last year. Pat Mahomes did not terribly good the first 57 minutes of the game, or 53 minutes of the game. And I'm telling you, if Tom Brady's up 20 to 10 in that game, he's winning that game, guys. Like, he's hitting a wide open Kittle on a follow route. Like, that's who the play was designed for. And he would hit him. He was wide open. Yes. Yeah, Jimmy G threw the ball to Sanders or whoever was on the outside, and he missed him by 7 yards. If Sanders is streaking open on a post, Tom Brady's going to hit him for a touchdown. Like, so I think that I keep saying, I think the Chiefs are going to blow him out, which I really,
really,
they have the capability to do that. But I keep going back to last year and how Tampa has played this year. I think at plus 3.5, I think I would take Tampa to cover the game. Just, I think everyone's betting on the Chiefs. I think there's more of a chance the Chiefs blow them out than Tampa wins, though.
Interesting. I think Kansas City wins, but that offensive line makes me nervous. I could just see this playing out like last year. I don't know why. Yeah, talked about it, it's been in my head. Like, I could just totally see a weird start and stuff gets kind of funky early on. And
Chiefs offensive line last year was good, right? And good. And yeah. I know Nick Bosa, the Bucks don't have a Nick Bosa, but JPP ain't bad.
Dude, he is balling. Couldn't you just see like a Shaq Barrett strip sack in the first quarter and the weird special teams?
Holmes has been beat up a little bit this year, like getting hit and stuff. There definitely is potential for this, but then the Chiefs could come out and score 14 points in the first two drives and it's over. Like, it can be.
Well, that is also true.
The thing about playing the Chiefs and why it's so tough is that you cannot let up for 1 second, because if you let up for 1 second, they're going to score a touchdown and the game has changed.
I'm going Chiefs 31, Bucks 27.
I took Chiefs 38, Bucks 27 today.
38?
Yeah, 38-27.
You are a maniac, but you could be right. You could be a genius.
After a bye, throughout the Browns game, because Mahomes got hurt, but after a bye, the Chiefs have scored at least 31 points in 6 games with Mahomes and Andy Reid.
I respect the courage.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll, if you're right, I'll have you on soon. If you're wrong, okay. I'll give you some space. as always, before I let you go, we got to do.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
5 more questions. Dinks and Dunks is presented by DraftKings, America's top rated daily fantasy app. Download the DraftKings app today and use code MENA to get in on all of the action. Jeff. We're going to talk about Deshaun Watson approximately 1,000 times over the next month, and we're largely giving listeners a break from that as we focus on the Super Bowl. But let me ask you this. Where, if you, just from a pure football fan's perspective, would you like to see Deshaun Watson play?
Oh, San Francisco.
I feel like my last guest did this too, and I made the same sound as a Seahawks fan. That's like my worst nightmare.
Kyle Shanahan and Deshaun Watson would be unfair to the NFL.
Bone-chilling.
It would be bad.
I don't like that. I don't like it at all, which means it's a good answer. Okay. Question two. Who is your, The Weeknd is playing Super Bowl. You know that song, The Weeknd song? I don't think I can sing
Blinding
it.
Lights?
Yes. Is it in your head like literally every hour of every day? Like it is.
Yeah, so it's on like 24/7.
Ooh-wee. Okay. Yeah. Who is your dream Super Bowl performer?
Ooh. Oh, I said this before. A hologram Tupac would be good for me.
Such a weird answer.
Just like have the whole gang, like have Snoop and Dre, which I hope he's feeling better. I've been seeing an update on him in a couple of weeks, his health, and Snoop, like have the whole crew just come out with a hologram Tupac. I mean, it wouldn't be safe for the kids to watch that halftime show, but I would thoroughly enjoy it.
Okay. I don't know about that.
I mean, it's not for everyone. I just think you asked me what I would like to see. That's what I like to see.
It is interesting. Now that I don't go to the game anymore, I watch it from home. We're doing shows in Tampa, but I don't actually cover the game. I actually get to watch the performers, and it's always much better on television than it is in person. So
last year was good. It was the first game I ever attended, obviously. That Shakira and you should hear anything, but it looked like it was fun.
Yeah, it was good. It was great on TV. It was awesome on TV. Okay. Question number three. Would you rather take a 6-hour road trip with Tom Brady and Andy Reid or Patrick Mahomes and Bruce Arians? Mixed it up for you there, made it tricky.
I would do Andy and Tom, just because to hear Andy and Tom give their food takes would just be gorgeous. It's such opposite ends.
That's a good one.
My brother tells a story about Andy Reid's favorite. He likes a chili relleno burrito. It's like a burrito wrapped in like a chili relleno. It's incredible. But you know, the first year I was in Kansas City, it was the only year I was there in 2013. I didn't really know Andy very well. It was Memorial Weekend. I'd been there a couple of weeks, you know, in the off season. We're at the airport and his wife, Tammy, who's fantastic, comes over to me and it's like, "Hey, are you in the Chiefs?" I was like, "Hey, yeah, it's, you know, Jeff." And he's, "Oh, coach, you know, Andy's over here." And like, so I and I started talking. And but Andy knew, and he'd only been in Kansas City since what, like January, February. This is now May, Memorial Weekend. He knew the exact times the burnt ends were ready at every barbecue spot in the city.
Like, that is incredible.
His passion for food is unbelievable. It would be a fun, fun ride. We talk about food for 6 hours.
I love that so much. Okay. One more Super Bowl question before we get to Lenny's question. Give us an outside pick for MVP.
Oh, Chris Jones plus 1,200.
They'll never give it to him. Did you think he should have been the MVP last year?
I think Nick Bosa should have been the MVP last year. I think he should have been.
Spicy.
I said that at the time. Like, I just thought he was the best player on the field on Super Bowl Sunday. No, Chris Jones is not going to win it, but you got to look. So, you know, it's Pat, Tom Brady. I mean, what would a running back have to do to out-duel those two guys? You know, wide receiver, you give it to a wide receiver, given it, if Pat throws for 325 yards, he's getting it, not Tyreek Hill. Maybe Travis Kelce, if he gets, you know, from the tight end position, 15 catches, which is a lot, obviously, and 175 yards, maybe he gets in three scores if he has some ridiculous game. Defense doesn't feel likely. Special teams not happening. So I mean, Chris Jones might have two sacks and a forced fumble, and I don't know. I just thought that was outside the box. Plus 12,000.
Oh, I do like those odds. All right, final question, as always, comes from Lenny. I didn't write it. I take no responsibility for it. So Lenny first wants to congratulate you for being right about Justin Herbert.
Thank you, Lenny. I appreciate it.
But he would also like to point out that on June 30th, 2020, you tweeted, "Josh Allen is not an accurate passer." Lenny's mom has issued many apologies and retractions or said, given great praise to Josh Allen. Are you ready to apologize in the Minicom show featuring Lenny?
I have apologized. I'll do it again. I'm sorry that I did not see the most historic improvement ever in accuracy over one entire season in NFL history coming from Josh Allen. I'm very sorry for that. I mean, it was incredible what he did. I mean, the improvement is historic. There's no other way around. And anyone who said they saw this coming, you're just full of shit. Yeah. But like, you did because it never been done in NFL history. This improvement had never been done before. And so he did a great job this year. But still, that YOLO, though, man, is still there.
You couldn't resist.
And I was right. And it's still there. So, but yeah, he improved a lot. And the Bills obviously have a bright future with him.